Hey listeners, before I get into this episode, I have a quick ask to make. I started this podcast as a research project on how to be a top individual contributor in the product design space. My goal for the show was to learn what it takes to be an individual contributor that is doing amazing, impactful work that they love doing day in and day out and getting paid top dollar while they do it. Becoming that type of individual contributor is the ultimate job security. With close to 100 hours of interview recordings, this has naturally led to the creation of the short-form video articles that synthesize my learnings into 10-minute listens of actionable content. You might recognize these as my morning walk episodes or the hashtag shorts episodes. To my surprise, those episodes have been very well received and listeners have enjoyed the synthesis of what I've learned. This has led to the next chapter of my research project, which is beginning to synthesize what I've learned into a new newsletter called Thinking Out Loud About Design that you can subscribe to right now for free. Thinking Out Loud About Design is an email newsletter and podcast that basically contains all my synthesis for my long-form interviews. It's pure distilled learnings that you can apply to your career immediately. This content is for you if you are a couple years into your career and you're trying to make that move from mid-level to senior designer and senior designer to staff designer. I mainly focus on becoming high-performing individual contributors in the product design industry. A free subscription gives you full access to the newsletter, podcast episodes, and website. You won't have to worry about missing anything because every new edition of the newsletter goes directly into your inbox. So my ask is this. If you have gotten any value out of the way of product design, or if it's helped you in any way or someone you know, please subscribe to Thinking Out Loud About Design and get the distilled learnings on being a staff-level individual contributor. You can find a link to the newsletter in the show notes of every episode of this podcast and on my LinkedIn page. Just look up Caden Damiano. Thanks again for listening and supporting the way of product design. I wouldn't be doing this if you guys weren't listening. Now, on to the show. Welcome to the Way of Product Design. I'm your host, Caden Damiano. This podcast has one mission: help product designers generate massive value for their clients, their companies, and themselves so they can do the work they enjoy the most. We know design is valuable, but how can you unlock the true value of design in your work? To help with this, I interview top performers in design, product management, and engineering so you can understand what's valuable to your stakeholders, your bosses, and your customers. So enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening. Hey, listener, I'm revisiting an old guest. His name is Brian Mortensen. I met him on LinkedIn a very long time ago when I was still in school. He was still at IBM, and our professional lives have been interconnected for a while now since then. I think, what, like 3 years probably at this point? And yeah, so we've worked together at Progressive Leasing. He went to Purple. And now he's my boss. We've come full circle. Now he's my boss, manager at Homie. So now you're not only are we seeing like a more evolved Brian Mortensen, we're also going to get a preview of kind of what our one-on-one sound like. We don't really talk a lot about professional development or work. We just end up talking about fun topic.
We try really hard to stick to the topics, but I think both me and you gravitate towards talking about trends and about some of the deeper level stuff that's interesting to us. But I always try to make space for you to tell me why you're killing it.
Oh man, thank you. I just think it's super cool that just like one little LinkedIn interaction and 3 years later, like we're still working together. It's a testament to how a lot of design, or I guess being in product, is just relationships and just knowing people and stuff. Yeah,
I think my attitude about relationships have evolved even more. Meaning, listen, I believe in a lot of stuff we're doing at Homie, but Homie's not nearly as important to me as the people I work around. And I don't know how companies would feel about hearing that, but I think the people you work around and the relationships you form inside of product and design organizations are likely the thing that will make you more pumped about doing work than necessarily the company you're working for. Of course, you're the users of your product are also something that you get inspired by, but I find the people I work with to be one of the bigger reasons that I like or dislike a company. So
that's super true, because if you look at the current roster of leadership at Homie,
a lot of it consists of people that we've already worked with, especially people that we worked with like on the product side and design side. I worked at Progressive Leasing, and our current director of product, Clay, who was one of your co-interviewees, like he was in that back second in episode as well back in the day. Yeah, now he's in product, which is interesting because he was my design manager and now he's in product. And I think the impetus for this episode was us talking about, hey, this is really interesting. Like our CPO is a designer. Clay went into directing product management instead and pivoted from design into a different career path. And I don't know just how like interesting of a trend that is, that you've mentioned that you've seen a lot more designers on Twitter, like design leaders on Twitter going into product management, right?
Agreed. Yeah, for sure. Hey, well, just one quick point before we move on to the topic, which is product management design. Just want to speak a little bit more about the relationship thing. It's just going through my head about how thinking about, oh, hey, in Utah or in design smaller companies, yeah, it's about relationships, but not the massive conglomerates and not in really professional organizations. It's not about relationships. And I think that's wrong too. And one really good example is how Apple really has risen. And that's because Steve Jobs took his crew of people with him in from most places and ended up wanting to work with those core group of people, because when you find good working relationships, you can make really great things because you don't have to redefine your interaction points, and you can, there's a lot of built-in trust when you work with people that you've trusted before. Anyways, so yeah, that's another good example. But yes, a lot of the Twitter people who I follow on Twitter who I would consider design thought leaders have either moved into product management or have talked about the reason that that you would move into product management. And I do think it's an emergent trend that we're seeing a lot of mid to senior level designers decide that product management is a better place for them. And I think that's just an interesting phenomenon. And really been ruminating with you and with Clay and even with Chris, our CPO, a little bit about like, why do we think that is? And I think I have a couple of hypotheses about why, but I'd love to jump into it with you today.
I know that you're definitely product management curious, for lack of an appropriate, good term, that yourself. Could you, like, for people that haven't seen you on interwebs before and know you, could you just talk about your professional journey from learning design to evolving into kind of a person that might want to leave design from an IC standpoint?
Sure. Yeah. And I will frame my work history in that way, meaning why I think that product management aligns with a lot of the reason I got into design in the first place, which is as I was going to school, I thought I wanted to be in creative arts. I was going to school for advertising. I wanted to be a capital C creative in advertising, coming up with campaigns and stuff like that, because I thought it was really good interplay between business and creative, meaning I like business problems, but I also like creative solutions. And at the time I was working at the Apple Store to get through college. And at the Apple Store, I was a creative, but what that really meant is that I was a teacher. And I would teach people how to use our software, mostly creative software like photo editing and that kind of stuff. And what I started really learning there was Apple's product chops are some of the best in the business. I know that's still disputed, but at least at that time, no one was doing a lot of the thinking about UI and UX that they were doing. I think they really were killing it. And as I was teaching people, the thing you do when you teach people software is you don't tell them how to do something. You try to help them understand the clues in the interface, because they need to be able to do this away from you as a teacher. They need to learn the app. So like, for instance, in like iPhoto, I would start learning like, oh, what is a good button? What makes a good button? Some things need to be evident from a button, right? What it's going to do, why I would press it, what will happen next. And these are things that I think intuit if you're a digital first person, but if you're an older person, those things are not intuitive necessarily. You have to learn that part of your brain. But what I slowly realized over time is that I enjoyed really well-designed products much more than I enjoyed really well-designed ad campaigns. And so I've shifted my thinking of going into advertising into, I want to go into some sort of digital creative space, and where that landed me in was design. So when I graduated, I didn't feel like I had nearly enough chops in design to just go into the industry. So I found a program for experience design for grad school in the VCU Brand Center, and went there thinking, okay, this is where they'll teach me how to be a designer. And I got there, and the head of the design track pretty quickly let us know, hey, I'm not going to teach you anything about pixels. I don't think that pixels matter as much as everyone thinks they are. You can learn most of that kind of stuff elsewhere for a lot cheaper and a lot less impact. If you want to be a graphic designer, this is not the place for you. What I'm going to teach you is how to think like a designer in business. And so he believed that design was an impactor in business, and mostly how the evidence was design thinking, right? Thinking about how you can design solutions for business problems, but really what that means is design solutions for users and then monetize those solutions basically for a business. And slowly over that program, what I realized is there's this big gulf between creatives who were doing copywriting or art direction and our designers, our experience designers who were doing pixels, and that they would focus on a lot of aesthetic things and we really wouldn't. We would focus on a lot of strategy things. Now, that did mean that I came out of that program a little bit weaker on UI design than I'd want. And that was a big gap, but it's also a big gap with most, I think, UX practitioners. And it's something since then, as the three places I've worked at, Progressive, or for IBM, Progressive, Purple, and now Homey, I feel like I've done better and better at understanding how to be a good UI designer, understanding how using systems are important. But I don't think I ever really got away from the idea that the important thing in a product is not the pixels. The important thing in the product is aligning your user needs and their jobs to be done to a business's value and creating a solution that makes both those things happen. And that, when you think about an interface, the interface is a secondary effect of that, meaning it's not the primary way by which that happens. Those things happen because of incentives and they happen because of discovery of the product. And the interface is the way that by which we transact through that, but it's not the reason for them being there. They're not there to interact with your pixels. And if they are, they're probably not representative of most people. Most people don't download apps because they look nice. They download apps because they accomplish a job. So ever during this whole time, I didn't have a really high opinion of PM because I think that most PMs get pushed into execution as opposed to discovery. And so once I started understanding the Marty Kagan model of product management is when I started really getting more, oh, I think that's what I like. I think I like thinking about the value and the viability of the business more than I like thinking about the usability of a thing. And I still have really complicated thoughts because I think design should care about that stuff almost as much, if not just as much as product managers should. And I've really thought that for a long time. I think it's only been in this past year that I think, I don't know if all designers would agree with me that they should care as much about those things. And maybe I'm an outcast as a designer because I don't align to the thinking that like, no, we'll focus on the pixels and the usability and you guys figure that stuff out. And I just refuse to like just shove over the value and the viability over the fence to them because I want it. So anyways, that's a little bit of a perspective of my journey to here through the trend.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Like, I think what got me into being, I think, more considerate of a PM career path was the fact that I did, like, I think we saw this before and we've like gotten feedback like back at Progressive Leasing that I think it's, I mean, yeah, Caden, you have like really great relationships with the engineers and the product managers, but the people I didn't get along with was the design, other designers on the design team, like who I really butted heads with the most. I felt like an outcast in my own profession because I didn't really care about the latest Figma release, or I didn't really care about the latest like abstract release or organizing design files and stuff. I just thought that was like part of doing the job.
And I think there's like a subsection of this conversation, which is like actual product design versus graphic design versus UX design. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate how big of gaps there are when people say that they're a UX designer and someone who says they're a product designer. Those two people tend to be very different kinds of designers. And I don't think graphic, like a lot of graphic designers will be really good at UI, but they don't want to engage in strategy at all. And so they basically want to hand it to them. I haven't worked with many of those people, but I definitely know a lot of those kinds of people. They just tend to not work in product orgs. They work in project orgs where they're executors.
Agencies, yeah.
Yeah, agencies, that's a good point, like an agency model. And if you look at the three of those, obviously, this is a podcast called The Way of Product Design. Out of the three of them, product design is most aligned to product thinking. So it doesn't take a huge leap to understand why product designers might be product management curious, because we already are defaulting or self-selecting as, you know, the way I like to do this is caring about the whole thing end to end. I want to understand everything about this. I think where product design can fall short is they say they want to do everything, but they don't really want to engage with cross-functional stakeholders. They think, no, I'll just do all of it. And then I'll have the engineers build it. And if it's not to what I want, then I'm going to tell them do it again. But really what that means is that every point in the process as a product designer, you've got to figure out how to make compromises. You've got to figure out how to make good relationships so that the pieces that you can't directly affect, someone else can, and that you can help drive that, but not being primarily responsible. So my biggest criticism about design right now is that, I don't know if you saw this Nelson Norman survey that said that according to designers, which things are designers responsible for, which things are product managers responsible for. Every single question they asked, designers said, this is mine and not there. And then, and that wasn't true for product managers. It was more split of, no, that's theirs. No, definitely this is mine. But it betrays a little bit of like, they say they want everything, but they're also not doing it all. So I don't know. That kind of rubs me the wrong way. But
my favorite quote from JB Jakowski is, designers like finally get a seat at the table and then they trade that seat for craft. Yeah. And they're like, but I still want to own everything that has to do with making specs. Like PMs can't make a flow articulating how they want the value to be delivered. They can't do that. They're not allowed to. And
what would you say seat at the table means?
I think they're helping running the business in the term of helping influence priority. What's your definition?
No, I think I agree with that. I would just say the minute I see designers get that seat at the table, there's this immediate defensiveness of you don't get to question what I'm saying. But the seat at the table by definition means, okay, yeah, let us hear what you have to say. And then everyone gets to question you and go, tell me this. But like, for instance, I still don't think design has a great grasp on what kind of metrics matter to design. Right?
Yeah.
Most of the metrics I think me and you will gravitate towards are business metrics. Right? I think systems usability scale is one that we've used before. I know they're super cute, but beyond that, it's mostly just us going, well, let's just use business metrics. And I think that indicates, again, that we don't like measuring our designs against objective frameworks. And I think this makes people think that we are trying to be artists, but artists or graphic artists, but that's the opposite of what design means. Design means is you're using creativity to solve a problem, which you can measure. You should be able to measure outcomes of design. But I don't think we're very good at that. I think we measure outcomes of products, not of the design itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and then the PM like takes the credit for the outcomes and you're like, what if he's just gonna take credit, I wanna be a PM too. And I could just say, oh, the product succeeded. When the design, a lot of the design inputs to that initiative were the reason it won, right?
Yeah, but if we can't demonstrate that,
yeah,
then I don't think that's on them. Them taking credit for a business outcome is a really, it's what they should do because that's their primary responsibility is business outcomes. If we as designers think, hey, the reason that succeeded so well is because of the design, there probably should be a way that we can prove that. And I don't think we try very hard. It's not that I don't think that's possible. I just don't think the designers try very hard to evidence that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so I guess, for me, what I've been trying to work on is being involved in demoing designs or like products more. So like the PM would talk about what we're doing, why we're prioritizing it, like what initiatives like we're going to be focusing on. And then, we also have this new release, I'm going to hand it over to Caden, which we actually just had an exec review today before this recording. And I felt totally stupid because Brian was like jumping in after his PM and like really doing a good job explaining the decision making behind certain things and like why we're releasing certain features. And I like messaged my PM and said, oh yeah, should I walk through the designs? If this is too last minute, never mind. But I totally spaced out on that.
Go ahead. Sorry. You keep going.
Oh, I get, this is a very like roundabout way of saying this, but when I present it and I talk about, hey, these are the changes we made, now that a customer can do this. It's more of a customer impact, but I don't know. Like I always default to customer impact. Like this is how the customer's life is different since we've made these updates. But I don't know.
That's a very UX driven thing, way of thinking, right? Oh, hey, listen, as a designer, this is the whole idea of UX design is I'm fighting for the user. And in theory, that makes a ton of sense, right? Being like, oh, you're just always fighting for the user. But what in practicality, if you always just fought for the user, you functionally destroy business value because you keep arguing, no, what's in the best interest of the user at this point is this. But that obviously has to be be held in sway with what the business needs. Yeah. And I think the original model for PMs and designers is, well, let's let each of them argue for their thing and then they'll compromise. But that never happens. There's no one that's like, hey, here's what the user wants. Hey, here's what the business wants. Hey, let's figure out a way to merge these. In practicality, designers care way more about the business succeeding than they would let on. And PMs typically really care a lot about how customers are acting. They just have, I think they maybe have different languages about how they talk about it. But like, for instance, I would argue in most places that I've worked that the actual expert on the customer is more the PM than the designer. The designer is the one that needs that information to design against it. But the PM is typically the ones who's discovering, hey, here's all the metrics of the health of the app. Here's what people are saying. Here's our hypotheses about how people are acting. And then we as designers consume that and go, cool, I can design against that information. But rarely is it the designer that has all that really deep understanding of the customer from a metric-based perspective or even from a business perspective and targeting. That doesn't typically come from design. So I think in some ways we have it a little bit backwards. And I used to think one of the reasons I'm product curious is I think I want to own that too. I want to be the expert on the customer. But usually that means I have to be an expert on the business as well. You can't just be an expert on the customer in a vacuum.
Yeah. And I think and as we're learning with our kind of our social experiment at Homey, where there's a ton of overlap between the roles and responsibilities, is that those aren't mutually exclusive to the role, right? Because it should be the PM and designer are both in the interviews with customers. Mm-hmm. The designer should be able to diagnose design problems by going into the analytics themselves. I've diagnosed a ton of design problems by just going into analytics. I think it's like what it comes down to.
So my question to that is, are you a typical designer? Because I agree that me and you want to dive into that. But in most designers you've worked with, talented people, very talented people. Do you know a lot of others that want to dive that deep?
Yeah.
Do they want that information, but they don't want to go get it?
Yeah. I'm going to answer that question with a TikTok trend. I guess I'm
just built different. Yeah.
Just built different. I don't know. You have to kiss your arm, right?
If you say that.
Built different. Yeah, I know. And that, I think that's another thing I'm like learning in the nuance of the whole problem. I feel like the objective has always been, okay, let's put everything in a box so we could set policies and hiring and stuff. I think that's a bad objective now. I think if we're trying to come up with like best practices for like how to build a team, the setting policies on what type of people we should hire or like what the job description of a designer is bad. Like I think the deliverable of a manager is to decide, okay, this is what the organization needs. And then they hire people like, oh, we need a designer with stronger UI, or we need a designer with stronger analytical thinking. And they design the org to meet the org's needs, if that makes sense. Because that's how I was taught in my program was, be strategic and understand the problem and do all the stuff.
Why do you think that is? Stuff. Why do you think all these design programs are focusing on strategy?
That's a really good question.
It might actually come back down to the word design, like what actually design means.
Yeah.
Because if I say, for instance, if I go to my mom and say, what is a designer to you? She probably would respond with something like someone who decorates an inside of a house and buys really nice clothes. If I went and asked a bunch of people I went to school with, what's a designer? Like just my age group of people, they would likely say, oh, someone that makes cool like covers and it's more the graphic design thing. If I go to my teacher from Brand Center, what's a designer? He's gonna think a lot about design thinking and about Frog and IDEO. And then if you ask designers who are digital product designers what designing is, we think design is what we do, but that's not, The word design is a hard thing. So when you're saying, hey, we need to hire a designer, what kind of designer? A product designer? Oh, a product designer with a strategic background? Oh, a product designer with a UI background? Those are really narrow categories of people. And I don't think people like generally being in a box like that. Most people who I know who are good UI designers, we have a really good UI designer here at Homey named Andy. We've worked with him before. I don't get a sense from him that he loves that's the UI guy. He wants to be more of a product designer and be able to do the end-to-end thing. But he is so good at the one little section that we want to keep putting him there because now stay there. Yeah, but it's hard when he's really good at it. I think the same thing happens with PMs and designers. They go, hey, I don't do that thing, but I do need that thing. Meaning as a really good PM, you need a designer that can execute at a high level. And so you're like, I need that. But we as designers go, no, but I want to do your thing. And I think some of the tension in that relationship is because they want us to be more craft and usability focused because they do need that part. They're not, I don't know a lot of PMs who really want to jump into the design side. I think they like to have opinions and they want to see it done well, but they don't like playing in that sandbox. But we, as designers, we're playing in our craft sandbox, but then we try to jump over into strategy and they go, no, you need to focus on the thing that I can't do. At Homey, I do think we're trying to purposely blur the lines to say, hey, designers, play in that space. And hey, PMs, a lot of the PMs here have design backgrounds. So they can have good opinions about design, but they might not have time to. So we might not hear from them sometimes, but at the end of the day, they're probably going to have some design perspective. And I think that alleviates some of the tension you sometimes feel with a PM and a designer in trying to push each other out of each other's space. Because you're like, no, everyone stay in the same place. But I do think that can create problems in terms of someone does need to be focused on craft. That is really important. And if it's not the designer, if the designer's over playing in strategy and the craft suffers, then that's bad. That's a bad outcome, which is, I think my hypothesis would be why you're seeing so many designers move into PM is, hey, I can't do both. And if I'm going to choose which is more impactful, I'm going to choose that because the craft stuff pigeonholes me and I want to be a thinker. And I want to rise and understand business value.
Yeah. And I think being a product manager is like one of the most high leverage positions. If you make a product release, that is going to be in the org for a long time if it's successful. Even with a successful UI design, that will get iterated on within a couple of years. It might get refreshed
or updated. With really good design systems, how much of an imprint is your hand on that thing? Not to say that you're not a great designer and you did everything exactly. How much visibility are you actually going to get to move up in an org, basically?
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's the tough part because I can't like really provide anything actionable to people with like my current perspective, which is very like the PM I have right now, I work with right now, she was a designer and she has design sensibilities. Actually, I'm about to go on paternity leave and I was walking through the designs so that she could, if I like left, she could do UX review on my behalf. Would I have done that with PMs that I've worked with in the past? No way, because they don't have that eye for detail. And so I feel like I'm in a privileged position where like I have a really strong PM that has a strong discovery muscle and research muscle that like whatever priority she pulls in, I agree with. And then I'm like totally fine churning out really good designs. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, oh, actually design's really great. But then I'm like, oh, is this just a product of some weird edge case wishlist squad? Like,
don't you think that when you have a really good PM, that's really well defining everything in strategy and you trust them, I find sitting in the craft really relaxing and very fun. Like really, really fun to go, no, they have the strategy stuff taken care of. I can just focus on design. That happened to me a couple times at Progressive where I was like, oh, I don't have to worry about strategy at all. The strategy stuff is really well taken care of. I can execute on the pixels and I can execute in the flows and we can win on this together. I think where the itch gets harder is when we don't have really good understanding of our user. Then I'm like, I don't want to work on the craft for a lot longer until I really know what that is, what that thing is. And that's where I think some of the reason that I'm curious, but it's hard to even think about a move is, oh, but I love the craft. I do really love it. I just don't actually think that I'm as good at it because it's not pushing my strategic mind. It's pushing a systems thinking mind. Like, how do I create really well done and well laid out interfaces. It's just different part of the brain. Meaning if let's say I'm designing and I'm doing just screen after screen, I'm pumping through like a prototype. I can turn on a TV show. I can turn on a podcast. I can turn on YouTube shows that have lots of talking in them. And I can ingest a bunch of other information during my day as I get work done. When I am in strategy mode, trying to do writing of tickets and review stuff and really starting to get more into the strategy side, doing like research and writing up proposals about how we're going to go about accomplishing tests and stuff like that, I can't listen to any of that. I have to listen to music that has no words in it because I'm actively engaging a different part of my brain. And out of the two of those activities, the one that I would tell you I like more is the design one. But the one that I tell you I find more fulfilling and makes me feel better about my work-life balance is this side. So it's hard. It's really hard.
Oh, yeah. And I 100% align with that. That's how I feel, is if I feel like something I did actually made a difference to the business who's like paying me money to work there. So mm-hmm. I feel like I'm paying them back for employing me and making their investment worthwhile. That's one level of fulfillment. But then also that the people, the customers that are working for us, are their lives are actually different with having the technology you're working on in their hands. And some, if the strategy is taken care of, designing's fun because you're like, okay, like we're zeroed in on a really like actionable problem. Mm-hmm. And like mm-hmm. now I get to like actually solution for this and come up with like different ideas. And I guess like I get, that's when like the fulfillment's harmonized, is like I know I'm like solving something big. But at the same time, it's like when I want to just take the PM's job is when the PM I work with is not doing their job, and or they're not doing their job well. And I'm like, do I want to differently than I would do? But I really think it's just the main deliverable I want from a PM is, oh, this is what the direction we should go. This is the problem we should solve. This is why. And then I'm like, okay, cool. But if they can't articulate that, and do I want to be a PM because I'm just frustrated with those kind of people? Or do I want to be a PM mm-hmm. because I really would like to do the mundane aspects of being a PM? And
yeah, and I struggled with that because I was thinking, okay, do I really want to prioritize the backlog? How fun does that sound? It sounds terrible when you say it out loud. But then I started thinking about it. It was like, oh, so I get to write acceptance criteria, what this thing needs to be. And then I need to think, which is the most impactful thing we can work on? And suddenly it doesn't sound boring at all anymore. It's actually super interesting. As a design, and this is where I get a lot of cognitive dissonance and where I'm feeling a lot of shame about being a designer. As a designer, if I'm talking about feature work, I'm like, I know which one of these things is the thing we should build next, because it's the thing that is the best thing for the user, for the business, we should build this. But when I'm thinking about priority, there's two other factors. There's how feasible is this to build, meaning how long will this take, the level of effort that will go into it. And is this small enough of an add that it's not going to add a bunch of risk into the process? Meaning, for instance, right now I'm on a product where we're going from zero to one, which means we didn't have a product and then we're going to have a product. And that takes a long time. And it makes me super uncomfortable thinking about priority, because this is way too big of a release. We're accumulating all this risk because we're not seeing our users interact with the product to make adjustments. We're just going to spend a bunch of time and then release this thing. And then we'll have to do all that at the same time. But as a designer, like at Progressive, for instance, I was very bullish about, I know this is what we need. We need to do this thing. And why aren't we doing it now? This seems dumb. Let's do this now. Look, I have all the data. Here's what the users are saying. We should build this now. But then if I put my PM hat on and I go, okay, let's look at the backlog. Is that more important than this bug? What's this, but how's this bug affecting our users? Oh, it's affecting like half of our users and it might be losing revenue. Oh, I do not care what this designer's saying at all, because we're going to go fix that first. Because that's the better choice. But as a designer, especially with, I just would get narrow vision of, this is obviously what we need to do. And there was zero patience on my part. And then the minute I start thinking about priority, really understanding priority and engaging with my PM on like why we're prioritizing things, suddenly all of that goes away. And it's, oh, we can always keep this in our back pocket because we can get there. We can get there. It's not important to get out now like I think it is. And so then I start feeling a certain amount of shame about, oh, as a designer, I was being bullheaded. And I think the more healthy emotional place at work would be to understanding priority about everything, meaning every decision I make about what to work on versus other things is a priority decision, right? Is it like, this was a trade-off for this. And even as a manager, I would say I'm starting to realize that priority is important, meaning, hey, what are me and Kaden going to talk about in our one-on-one? Now, the designer part of my mind is, we need to do this. But the PM part of my brain, or the priority part of my brain, is, what's the purpose of this? What does this person need to get? What does Kaden need to get out of this? So for instance, if I'm in a one-on-one with you and we veer off into talking about Pixar and Creativity Inc., I don't have to be as worried if we don't hit every single thing in the agenda. But I think my designer brain would really be bugged by that. So I don't know. I keep coming back to these two brains things.
Yeah, that's super true. And I think you just like unveiled something for me, is like designers, like very bullish on like, we want to see like comprehensive products. But I think the, now that we're, what we're learning is learn how to think big, but like work small. Mm-hmm. And like impact priority. And what I love about what we're doing at Homey is that we're encouraging designers to write acceptance criteria on their designs. Like they have to articulate in words. And so I've been really enjoying, hey, like PM, like you could write, I'm not taking the whole responsibility from you. You could write the ticket and like the user story and like why it's important. What's the business case? But I would like to own the delivery of my designs and articulate, like, this is how the design should work and behave. Because then that shows me like, as I write it out and it starts becoming like a novella, like length, like acceptance criteria, I'm like, oh, this is huge. This is a really big release. Like you brought out, oh, well, it has to do this, has to do this, has to give notifications, has to do this. And I'm still surprised that they think they could get done in a sprint, this current release I'm working on.
Yeah, yeah. And Caden, something crystallized for me recently with work you were doing, and without getting too specific, but Caden had created these incredibly new cool designs for a new product that Homey is considering. We're not considering it. We're going to launch it. It's going to be awesome.
It's a thing.
Yeah. And you built these great form fields. And the main UX of this product is a form field. And then there was a bunch of pushback from designers who say, well, hey, we have a form field and it might be live in code. And I think both me and you agree that form field isn't very good. I think at some point it might have been better, but like it's very clearly dated UI and yours are clearly superior. Now, as a designer and as a design manager, I'm like, this is easy. We're not going to use those bad forms. We're going to use these new ones. But then I heard engineering say, oh, we might actually be able to use reusable components that could cut down on the time that this would take to build. And I will tell you, I had a little bit of a crisis when I was thinking about what I would advise you to do on this. Because I'm like, okay, on the one hand, that is clearly better. And are we going to build high quality UI here or not? Are we going to insist on it or not? But then on the other hand, the priority part of my mind and the PM part of my mind goes, if we release that as a first iteration and then try to fast follow with the, and when I say that, I realize I'm on video. But if we release the stuff that's not as good, but it'll take a lot less time, and then we get to the better version at some point, can we provide some value and learn some things along the way? And both perspectives are true. Meaning I don't find fault in thinking about either one of those perspectives. And I think that's the point. Meaning, oh, every decision you make in a product is a trade-off between these different elements. And I was like, why am I so uncomfortable with not knowing the answer? And I was like, oh, because as a designer, I would always feel like I could come to the clear-cut winner of what we should do. But I don't think product management ever feels that way. In fact, I know they don't. That it's always a trade-off with them.
I guess it depends on the product manager's background, right? Because if like they're an MBA, like you go through an MBA program, all the answers, like you go through the case studies and you have the right interpretation of the case study. Yeah. And they're going to be like, oh, obviously we're going to use the old form fields. And like, they might jump to like that conclusion. And so
but don't you think they know that's a compromise? I don't think they're blind to the fact that that is better. And maybe they're just as sure in their answer about which one to do. And that's probably a good point.
But at the same time, I'm like, this is really, it's hard to make this like an actionable takeaway because the context, like my PM is a designer who values delivering value and like a high quality product at the same time. And she was bullish on, yeah, I don't want to use those form fields. Let's find out if they really like disrupt delivery. And we already budgeted. We want to get this done in a month. And if we can get done in a month with better fields, we're going to do it. Even if it maybe takes 5 weeks, like we missed the goal by 1 week or something, we're still going to do these good fields. I don't know. It shows like why like a product role and a design role is so hard to like make a curriculum for.
Yeah.
It's a lot of critical thinking.
You've also just pointed out something to me that maybe starts making more sense of why designers who are going into leadership end up on the product side. Because as you go into design leadership, those trade-offs become much more apparent because you're not seeing anymore. You're not thinking about the pure path. You're managing people and trying to help them have better cross-functional relationships and be more impactful. And as you manage a designer in that way, like I just said, I started understanding how PMs must feel Meaning like I put myself in that space. So if I'm a design manager or design director, or even at the C level, it would become more and more about compromise and about finding the right amount of compromise. And I think that there's likely a case that, oh, designers need to learn that skill. But at the same time, it is really nice to have people who insist on high quality experiences and pixel perfect designs and systems that are adhered to. And one of the big risks of what we're doing at Homey is, hey, with all this product thinking going on, who's going to insist on the craft? Who's really going to insist on the craft? Now, I think you can make an argument that, hey, if all these product managers came from design, maybe the product managers can help insist on higher craft. They just don't get to do it. And so that becomes passive aggressive, being like, no, this has to be top-notch stuff. And we know what that means because we were designers, but we're not going to do it. Someone else do it.
I wonder if it's just them like enabling designers to give like the best response, and then they just create space and like resourcing. I mean, it means trading off fixing the bug. Because I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh, if we have a bunch of, because we start going down the route in Homey where it's like all the designers we hire are just like really great UI craftspeople. Mm-hmm. And then the PMs are inevitably going to be worried about craft as well, which isn't, that's a type of PM, right? That's a Steve Jobs type PM, I think. You know, if you look at like different leaders, PM types, like there's PMs with strong design sensibilities that are going to prioritize strong consumer product quality as well as,
That's another good point to think about. Meaning, I think on the design side, we're pretty familiar with the different kind of designers and being like, oh, there's the disagreements between these groups. Meaning I've worked with, I call them UX terrorists because they feel like they're a cult and they're willing to blow up a building.
Yeah. They're like ideologues, man.
The Norman Nelson people, I don't know. I don't get along with them. I can see their point, but I think that they take it way to an extreme. That exact same dynamic likely exists on the product management side.
Yeah, the Marty Kagan guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but the Marty Kagan guys are the designers. I'm saying there's the MBAs, and those are not super aligned to Marty Kagan. The MBAs are what you're saying, though. It's like, hey, this is a business and we're going to make money. And so that's what I'm all about. Then there's the Marty Kagan, more product design oriented Silicon Valley group people. And then there's technical PMs who really don't have to think about a lot of business strategy. They're thinking tactical strategy and about like how to deliver value to the org if they're technical. And those three groups likely disagree with each other just as much, the different kinds of designers, if not more, because again, product management is not as defined, I think, as what a designer does. A designer has an output that's very clearly design. What is the output of product management? Managing? No, because they're not managing it. It's one thing that really bothers me about the name is I really hate that we call the product managers because it makes it seem like they're managing either people or the product. And I hate that. I hate it so much because that's not what they should do. They shouldn't be managing anything. They're not in charge of anyone or anything. They're supposed to be figuring out how to create value for the customer and the business. That's an IC role. That's not a management role anyways.
Yeah. It's really tough too, because I've been saying very publicly, oh, like I feel like the product management role has been developing into this role that's actually like taking up like the front end of design thinking. Like they are owning, empathize, and define a little bit more in the process. And then all the kind of the craft components like IDA, prototype, test is just the designer's job, which isn't a bad thing. You can even parse down design squads. Like I heard the idea of if you're going like a bleeding edge team that really just wants to focus on getting revs in, you pair a UX architect, a UI person, and then like a front end UI engineer to prototype. Mm-hmm. And you like compartmentalize that way. But yeah, I don't know. But then like product managers, yeah, you go to an MBA and then they're like, oh no, like I'm the mini CEO.
That metaphor needs to be shot in the back of the head, behind the shed and buried forever. Because first of all, you've identified another thing that as a pet project of mine, the word CEO makes no sense. What in the title, and this is Simon Sinek's thing, so I'm stealing it. Hmm. What in the title of CEO tells you what they do? Oh, hey, listen, I executive all the time. That's so dumb. So most people think what a CEO is they're the man in charge. Like they're directing everywhere. And this is a Steve Jobs thing too, of like his hands was in everything. And it's like, yeah, because that guy was a product manager, not a CEO. He was product managing, thinking about trade-offs and having basically acceptance criteria for every product in his org. Most CEOs aren't like that. Most CEOs are about managing people.
Or former CFOs.
Yeah, and that's also problematic because at that level, you shouldn't have to manage very much. There are other executives. What you really want to see out of CEO is a vision, right, of where we're trying to go. And that's where I do think if you have a CEO who's vision-based, or Simon Sinek makes an argument you should call CEOs chief vision officers. If they're a mini chief vision officer, the product manager, then I'm all for that. I'm all for that because someone on that team does need to have strong product vision. And this is where I think PMs lack generally, at least here in Salt Lake, in the Salt Lake Valley. And I interact with a lot of PMs in Silicon Valley that fell into this bucket too, which is they weren't about vision at all. They were only about tactical execution of ideas and about execution. They basically got out of the discovery mindset and into the delivery mindset. And that's why Marty Kagan is so insistent on get that thinking out of here. You need your PMs to be thinking strategically, not tactically. So it's interesting.
I like how he just says, if they like that so much, make them a delivery manager. There's a job now. Go do that then.
And I was looking into what delivery manager, project managers, or scrum, the really senior people make, and they make comparable. I don't think it's that much less. So I think sometimes we think that's a downgrade, but a good delivery manager is also, if I'm a designer and I have a good delivery manager and a good PM, I feel great. I feel like I can just do design because this will get delivered and they'll help me make sure that it got delivered correctly so the design happened. And this person, the PM, will help me understand what we're doing and whether it's really going to move the needle. And maybe that goes to the core of why designers suck, is that there's never a lot of trust outward in either direction. And there's probably good reasons of why we distrust. But I do think when we come into an org and we go, hey, I want a seat at the table, and I don't trust you and I don't trust you, and everything I say should be billed exactly how I say it, that's not a great negotiating position. that's one of the reasons we have a reputation of being assholes is if we act like that. And so one of the things I admire about PMs is they have very similar concerns about trust. They have very similar desire to control end to end, the same way a designer does. They just know, and I think their positioning and what they're taught how to act, they are taught how to figure out how to do that in a more productive way where they can keep their seat at the table. And design hasn't figured out how to do that yet. So that's the crux of why I feel product curious.
Well, and I don't know, that gives me like a guilt complex because I'm like, am I going to product because I'm running away from design because they haven't figured out how to be like a business stakeholder? Am I running away from that? Because then I'm like, or what if I could be a really good designer and a business stakeholder? I think we keep talking about stakeholders, but like you're a stakeholder to everyone else. I don't know if we see it that way.
No, and I'm a stakeholder to other disciplines.
Yeah,
for sure. Who doesn't design doesn't really get their door knocked on very much. There's not a lot of people who go, hey, I have this idea and I want to run it by you. That doesn't happen to design. We're the ones that go, hey, I have this idea and I need you to help me get it through, because we don't hold the levers of power. And I would actually, one trend I have seen is a lot of companies who have invested in design first have failed. Like there are good examples here in Salt Lake Valley. I think a good example is Pluralsight. They put together an incredibly product first and design first culture there. And it was misaligned to their business model. I don't think that it failed because anyone did anything wrong, but it didn't work. It didn't work. I would also look at Snapchat. That's a design led company and very clearly a design led company with their CEO being a designer as well. And that company got Sherlocked by everyone. Stories was their innovation in it. And they did a really great job and executed on it great, but their strategy about making money and about adoption across platforms wasn't good enough. I bank with Simple and they closed. They got bought and were acquired, and it wasn't the design and even some of the product polish wasn't enough to really make the business viable. So I do think there are good reasons not to trust designers to be the decision makers in a company. I do see that perspective.
Yeah, really good. And that's the hard thing too, because I've been like, okay, one thing that is like a hot button topic is OKRs. And we've debated about it. I've kind of been on like a quest to figure out like what the original purpose of them were. And I've been working with the product, like the group managers, Progressive, because at the Homie, we've been trying to refactor, they're trying to refactor like how we manage by objectives at a high abstract level, not just constrained to framework. But the hard thing is like the measure what matters framework's a lot more flexible than like the guidelines Marty put in a couple chapters in his book. They actually allow for like input KRs and hard to measure like outcome KRs, like input KRs. Yeah. I feel like it's more appropriate that way, but because the hard thing is like another attempted definition at product management is a chief investment officer, where you're actually like making bets and you're identifying mm-hmm. bets, and there's not like a direct correlation between the bet you make and the actual business impact. Like you're aiming to win at a certain like business metric, but like at the same time, it's, you have to make bets, which are inputs into the system. And I don't know. Design, I feel like a lot of what we're doing is we're designing the bets that we're going to make, but there's no guarantees that like everything we put out is going to win.
Okay. So I think you've just unlocked another vector of this debate for me, which is Marty Kagan take on OKRs versus Measure What Matters take. I would point to Measure What Matters take as being something that is academically studied and then put out and published. And then and I would say that not the framework itself, but the way that they approach the publishing of the information is much more rigid in that they're like, this is how you should do it, and here's why. Marty Kagan's approach is not, here's what you should do and why. He's saying, my firm, Silicon Valley Product Group, we work with all these companies and we are constantly monitoring how they're doing things. And his take on OKRs is it's not working and you should stop using them because no one's using them in a way that is productive to the organization. Not that they're right or wrong, meaning no one's using them in the original framework, which is what you're saying, using how Measure What Matters said to use them, but also no one's really adapting them to be productive. And so he thinks they do more damage than good. Now, mm-hmm. where I see some of the same little conversations is design gets stuck in the way we think it should be of like, here's how it was defined, here's how we're gonna do this. And I think product management is much more aligned to Marty Kagan's model, which is here's what we're learning and here's how we're going to change things as we go. And so they're more comfortable with ambiguity. And even as we've tried to introduce processes at Homey for our product managers to follow, we've introduced discovery briefs, we've introduced some steps they have to take. Most of their feedback is, hey, listen, this is great, but sometimes don't want to use this and sometimes I want to use something else. And how flexible can we be? And I think that might highlight the big difference between design thinking in product orgs and product thinking in product orgs. Product thinking in product orgs is never about gospel. There's no canon. There's not a single source of truth. There's just discovering what to do as you go along. Metrics help you do that. In design, and I'm guilty of this, and I still is, there is a metric and there is a framework that is true, and that's the one we should use. And I would point to the argument about tools as a good example. The Figma sketch XD debate is a religious debate. It is something that people feel that they need to evangelize. And I don't know how synonymous this term is with your audience, but Bible bash on, right? Where it's like, no, let's Bible bash on your tool. And it's because the thinking is that there is some absolute gospel truth that we should uncover, as opposed to you don't hear PMs being like, hey, which framework should we use? And everyone's like, this is the one. It's which one? Let's adapt it. I've seen this work well. And they're much more loose with trying to figure out what to do. Now, I would argue to a negative extent, meaning frameworks are powerful for a reason and standardization helped for a reason. And so I find myself in this weird place between these two groups and two schools of thinking where I see both sides. And quite honestly, what I've dreamed about is maybe this should just be one role. Maybe a designer should also be the PM, but I realize that's problematic and probably not realistic at all.
And adding an extra 40 hours to the work week to do it right.
If you were to do this, you would have to have a ton more squads,
basically,
and a lot more engineering support. But
yeah,
and part of me wonders if one of the reasons that there is a discovery duo on one side is so that we can win arguments against development. Because if it's just one person going to a group of engineers, the engineers could go, no. But if it's two people saying the same thing, it's a lot easier. And even better if it's that delivery manager who's also insistent on like product thinking with the engineering. Now it's a real fight. And I wonder how much of the squad has really arisen out of that. Let's just take different jobs and put more people in them so that there's more equal weight in the conversation between engineering and product.
I agree with everything you say, like at a principal level. Like we should take the framework and take what's useful for us. and then throw away what doesn't work, because it should be tailored to what your organization needs. I have a pull quote
for you to when you post this on LinkedIn, which is OKRs were made for product teams, not product teams made for OKRs.
Yes.
Meaning the OKRs are for us and they help us. We have not been built to serve the OKR model. So,
but that being said, I will say that my impression of Marty Kagan's was very inflexible. Must be like a metric that you're pushing. Must be that. Whereas like measure what matters is, okay, here's some different types of objectives. Here's some different type of KRs. Here's the Legos. Design your KRs and then get better at them as you iterate and stuff. So I actually do feel like it is more flexible. But then when you go to an MBA-minded product manager and you tell them, mm-hmm. oh, OKRs is just a way to help us focus work towards objectives. It's not to... Mm-hmm. The outputs themselves
are not valuable.
Yeah, the outputs themselves aren't valuable.
Even the KPIs are not necessarily in and of themselves really an indicator of anything. Because I can pick a KPI that I can make go up, but it doesn't translate into an objective. I agree.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're like, but they can't, they're like, but it has to be measurable. We have to measure business impact, which is a quote from Inspired. And I'm just, but we can measure business impact in a lot of different ways. We don't need to use the OKR framework to do everything. We just need it to make sure that like we document priority and bets we're making.
But one thing about Marty Kagan, and I realize the fact that I'm defending him so much makes maybe you realize that maybe I should be a PM, is he wrote something in Inspired. And then on his blog, he's saying, ignore it. That's not true anymore. Because what he was saying in Inspired is, hey, I agree, a little bit of a more inflexible model. And I think it was because he's seen that being valuable. But then he saw that, I think what you said, which is he went out and he went to all these clients and he saw that people who did focus on the metrics in a more literal way, being like, you know, you have to be able to measure it, typically started forgetting about the objectives. Mm-hmm. The objectives were less important and they just were pushed aside or made cute in some way, right? Like they're just like these funny little sayings about what your KPIs were. And so I think what he's saying is, I don't think that any org has done this right. And so I think the model should not be used. If anything, he's arguing against OKRs entirely, I think.
So I read that article and he did say that. That's not my go-to, like, this is how you should manage. I think he took a step back to the first iteration, like pre-Andy Grove, HP, which is just management by objective. You give objectives to people and then they figure out how to solve the objective. Like he even took a layer back because people get too granular. Like they try to optimize the OKRs. They've tried to put OKRs on every level of the organization. And it's almost like they become designers. No, this is how... we should be measuring objectives.
And designers are typically the ones with strong opinions there too. Have you read Empowered? I haven't read Empowered yet, but I wonder if he talks about
it. I have. He does. He focuses more on like objectives, management by objectives. He addresses the blog post he made where it doesn't work. If you are going to manage by objectives, there's only two layers. There's the executive layer, like company objectives, and then goes down to squads. And then the managers coach and empower
to help them. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the managers help make the conversations to tie like the executive, like company objectives to squad objectives. And then it's more about like the squads need to come up with the KRs that they think is appropriate. And the managers can't say, oh, must be this, must be that. They can't say, they just need to coach quality.
So
I
read an article recently about Netflix and they did the inverse of that, which is that quarterly the leadership team on the product side got together and defined the KPIs they wanted to drive. And these usually were leading indicators. The example they used is adding to queue. I think you've heard this. Adding to queue is the best indicator that someone's going to stay subscribed to Netflix, as if they add to queue a lot back in the day, not anymore, but back in the day. And what they would do is they'd define the KPIs they wanted to see move. And then they would take that back to the teams and go, hey, pick which one of these you think you should work on your product, which KPI you want to drive, and then think of the reason why, meaning you're the one that needs to come up with the objective of why you want to do this, but the KPI is how you measure. And what they say, the reason that's helpful for a scale org, a really big org, is all the KPIs are rolling into each other. So you can show a kind of an orchestrated effort across the teams trying to drive progress on these things, on these OKRs, these leading indicators. But the reasons they do that are their own. And they might be uniquely different from each other. And so the purpose of the work is it doesn't need to be the same, but the directionality of the work is the same. I thought that was interesting because I agree with you. I think that might be the inverse of what Marty Kagan would say. I'll have to send you that article and you should post it on your
account
so that people can see it. It's really good.
Yeah, for sure. After I came out of it, I was just like, whatever like matches like the skeleton here is that there just needs, like, I just want a strong, articulated, hopefully documented commander's intent of what like my CPO wants to accomplish. And what are some of the things, like some of the needles he wants pushed? They could be KPIs, they could be outcomes, like, but what's different after we do our work? And I just want to know what they want to do. And then I'm like, okay, cool. Because when the best objectives of our executives are just passing by comments of, man, I wish like we did this more. And then what I did at Progressive was, oh, like I heard the founder say, oh, they should be able to jump in anywhere in the customer lifecycle in like a lease to own scenario. And we should be able to recognize them. You should only have to apply once. And he said that in like a comment in a meeting. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm going to focus towards that. But because it wasn't documented and it wasn't like consensus. Mm-hmm. And then he wasn't even like in charge by the time I started working on it. Like he just moved out into like a weird kind of like, I'm a founder hanging out around the company role.
They call it Skunk Works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever read the book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Andreessen Horowitz? I think it's Andreessen Horowitz.
I've heard it enough where it's like embarrassing that I haven't yet.
You should check it out. The reason I like it is his argument is it depends most of the time what you should do. One thing I can't stand, and I hope I'm not calling anyone out, but one thing I can't stand is when successful people try to tell you what to do to be successful.
Yeah.
Believing that the way that they did it means that it'll ensure success for you. And it's an easy way for the brain to work because the brain says patterns are patterns. And if I do it and I am successful and they do it, they'll be successful. And then other people fall into the same trap, right? Of, oh, they did it to be successful, so I should do it to be successful. For instance, Tim Cook wakes up every day at 5 or 4 in the morning to work out. And for a while, a bunch of other C-level executives said, oh, I do it because Tim Cook does it. But that doesn't help. First of all, might not be related. This is one of the reasons that I think frameworks can be dangerous is, oh, because Google did this, we can do this. First of all, did Google do this for very long? Does everyone at Google still use this? Just because Google tried this doesn't mean it's good. And then I look, hey, you know, IDEO does design sprints. Here's how IDEO, you know, does design sprints. If IDEO does it and we do it, we'll be successful. Not the case. Sometimes that's not the approach. And I think actually IDEO would be the first to tell you, like, oh, every client's different. Like we do different activities with different clients.
Yeah, you saw one case study. You saw one case study.
Exactly.
And also just to give, so OKRs, Google's like the famous practitioner of OKRs. So I did a little digging. They adopted it when they were like a year old and it was pretty robust. Like it was like OKRs at every level. You had personal OKRs. And I reached out to a designer that works there right now. And I'm like, is OKR still a thing? And he's like, yeah, but it's just executive team level. That's it. Those are alive and well, but we don't do personal OKRs anymore. They've like really pulled it back to just focus on, okay, this is what the squad's objectives are. And then this is what the organization wants to accomplish, which for Google, it's a bunch of different companies and organizations and stuff. So
I think about it, the more I think about the framework itself being, hey, these are powerful for a while and then they're not. And the minute they're not, do we abandon the framework? Do we adjust the framework? I don't know the answers to that. I still think I'm struggling with that.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons that I'm product by curious is it does feel like they never truly commit to any single framework. And if I'm building a team of people, let's say I'm about to start something, who do I want? Dogmatic thinkers who believe in specific frameworks as I start something new? Or do I want a bunch of people who are like, I don't know what the answer is, but I sure as hell will find out. And that's where I think I admire really good product managers, where I think even really good designers aren't as good at it, at that part. And that's the reason I think really good designers, as they rise, tend towards product, because they're more of that. They're trying to figure it out, and the product is the place they can figure it out. I look at the two examples that you've listed at our company, right? Chris Fryer, designer, now CPO. I think he tends towards trying to figure out ways that we can build great products as opposed to how we design them. Clay, one of the more opinionated designers I've ever met in terms of what he thinks about UI design. I think he realized the impact that you can make with really good design thinking and design outputs is a lot lower than really great product management. And really great product management means different things in different places. And so it's hard, it's higher risk and harder to do, but much broader reward and I think broader impact than really good design. And I guess the piece that's still missing for me is, okay, if every designer thinks that way, then who's doing the really good design? And that's where I'm like, maybe it's just UI designers. Maybe we say, hey, let's get rid of UX thinking, because UX thinking belongs in product management anyway. And we should just focus on really great UI designers, because I'll be honest, really great UI isn't in very many places in the products we use every day. Some of the really big names have it figured out, but most of the smaller companies really suck at it.
Yeah.
And I don't take us out of that conversation, because really good UI is hard.
Yeah. It's a very tough. And once I like invested in getting good at UI, is when I realized how valuable it was. But the problem is I'm like, that's dumb. Like you shouldn't have to get good at UI to value it. And I think that's almost, the whole.
The metaphor that comes to my mind, and I know it's not perfect, is it's like a really good kicker on a football team. Uh-huh. When you need that, and it's the way that you're going to win, it's the most important thing. But most of the time that guy's on the bench, and that's where it's, so is there a lot of glory in being a kicker? No, there's a lot of risk and there's a lot of willingness to help win, but you're not making the calls. And so if I'm thinking about where I want to be on the field, would I rather be the quarterback or the kicker? Probably the
quarterback.
Yeah. But that's an imperfect metaphor, but it's what makes me think of like designers getting sidelined basically. But very important.
I feel like the designers are like the receivers and running backs. Like the PM like throws them the ball, like we catch it and bring it over the goal line. And that's not
going to be involved in making the play.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's the problem with that metaphor, is that the routes are pretty set. Like for receivers and like PMs can make like a last minute, quarterbacks can make a last minute decision. Okay, I think we're going a little too far.
Simon Sinek would say that all sports metaphors hurt business thinking, because there's almost never winners and losers. There's almost always just winners. And then
people that stop playing.
That stop playing, but like you can lose. For instance, Homie, this is another kind of PM thing. Homie, who are our competitors? We have a bunch of other companies that are doing similar things as us, or are doing things in more traditional ways than us. And you'd think that those people, both the newcomers and the Zillows and Redfins of the world, are our enemies. But really, if we succeed and they succeed, there is plenty of space for both of us to succeed.
So yeah, the whole space.
We should be cheering them on, and they should be cheering us on. And that's not what happens. We view each other competitively because of the quarter and the MBA mindset of market share and the quarter revenue. But I sit here and I think, no, I think the real worthy thing to hate for us is like renting or real estate law, as opposed to these other competitors, because those are barriers to getting our users to where they want to go. Our users don't care about Zillow and Redfin. They don't have strong opinions. They just want to use a service. Anyways, I the infinite game, I think, is really where I started thinking I might be a PM. Because I read it and I was like, I think I might be a PM, because that's the kind of thinking that I don't think happens in design as often, in terms of what market are we actually in? What are the jobs to be done here? And I don't know that a lot of designers that I know like to think that deeply about that kind of stuff. Or maybe I'm completely wrong.
Ours depends on the person. And I guess the books, like all of Nassim Taleb's books, he like goes through like how mental models fool us and fail us. And the whole like quote from Simon Sinek about sports metaphors, it's actually called, it's a logical fallacy called the ludic fallacy, where you use games to explain life. Like how people explain, oh, we're playing chess. Like when you're like trying to do political maneuvering, it's like, no, this is not chess. This is poker. Like but even then it's an incomplete, it's like a bad way to make frame of life, because then people are like, oh, like our goal is to win, the Steve Ballmer Microsoft days. But yeah, no, more yeah,
winning,
this is...
winning. The only way to win is to keep playing. And in that way, I think we're winning, Caden, because we're advancing in our careers. So
Yeah, and that's about, and then also it's like, maybe go to PM because that's what the org needs, and then go back to design. Like, you don't have to have a linear career. Yeah, I think infinite game doesn't mean like you're always going up. You're just.
And I had a professor who would talk a lot about, and this is more on a personal note as I try to decide what to do next, which is, it's really hard to connect the dots going forward. The only way to connect the dots of your life is backwards.
Yes.
Right? And making a move into product, I think would be hard to anticipate what that would really mean in the future. But yeah. I do think the people who I've seen do it, I'm like, oh, I can connect the dots of how design prepared them to be better product management and product leaders than they would have been had they come from somewhere else. So I'm still very grateful for my design background. And I don't think that I'll ever be able to leave design alone. But it's the water looks really nice over there, man. The grass.
I think just to tie this up in a bow, I feel like we came out of this with more questions than answers, which is good. It's like, we're like, actually, like, nothing I believe in or have had strong opinions about has a very strong footing argumentatively. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good podcast as this is like a mental iteration towards what works. It really is like, should you stay a designer? Yes. If it works for you, if you want to go into product, mm-hmm. sure. But what we are noticing though, is that the designers that go into product leadership, like, what's funny is there's so many bad aspects of designers, like personality traits and stuff, but the ones that do go into product, like, you could point to, hey, design is what's making them a good product leader, which is interesting.
It's rounding them out. And I think, the big lesson for me in most of the things in my life and in my professional life right now is the answer to most questions is, well, that really depends.
Uh-huh.
It really depends on some things. And it's an uncomfortable place because it's less... You can't get angry as often, and there's not as much righteous indignation because it's like, it's hard. That's why I love the hard things about hard things.
I got to get into it, especially.
Well, cool. Thanks, Caden.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
To everyone who listens to this podcast, Caden is as cool as he sounds on his podcast, and it's an honor to get to manage you. It's also really the easiest job I've ever had because go-getter over here with all the things that you're doing. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Moore. You have a good one.
You too.
Thanks again for listening to The Way of Product Design. One quick favor, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your network, your friends, and hit that subscribe button on the show wherever you're listening to it. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I'm really excited to bring more awesome interviews and content your way. So keep listening, you won't be disappointed.